Ever drive through a neighborhood and just see a house that looks like totally out of place?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It makes you wonder, can a city actually tell you, nope, can't build that, just because it clashes with the rest of the block?
It's a really interesting question. Gets right to the heart of property rights.
That's exactly what we're diving into today, the case of Reed v. Architectural Board of Review.
A classic case.
Especially relevant for all you law students out there, thinking about zoning, local government power.
And the limits of those powers.
Exactly. So picture this. Donna Reed, Cleveland Heights, Ohio, wants to build her dream home.
Okay.
Single-story, flat roof, kind of a modern design, and a 10-foot wall around part of it.
10-foot wall, huh?
Now, this wasn't some new development cookie-cutter houses. This was an established neighborhood, mostly multi-story homes.
So her design would definitely stand out.
Big time. She submits her plans, and the Architectural Board of Review basically says, "Hold up, not so fast." They denied her permit, saying the house didn't fit the high character of the neighborhood.
Not meeting the aesthetic standards, essentially.
But it wasn't about safety codes or zoning lines, purely about how it looked.
Purely aesthetic judgment. That's where things get tricky, legally speaking.
So the big question is, can a city actually do that? Can they say, "Your house is too ugly, you can't build it"?
It really gets into this tension between individual property rights and what's considered best for the community.
Huge question, right? Where do you draw the line? So to break it all down, we went straight to the source, court documents, legal analysis, the whole nine yards on the Reed case.
Primary sources are key.
Let's start with the basics, the background, and facts.
All right, so we have Donna Reed wants to build this modern single-story house, flat roof, 10-foot wall, all of that.
Yeah, pretty distinct style.
In this neighborhood of mostly traditional multi-story houses, the board says no, not because it's unsafe or violating zoning rules, but purely on aesthetics.
Right, doesn't fit the look and feel, could bring down property values, that sort of thing.
Exactly. And it's not a suggestion to change a few things. It's a hard no on the building permit.
So what does Donna Reed do? She fights back, of course, takes it to the Court of Common Pleas, then appeals to the Ohio Court of Appeals.
Making her way up the legal ladder.
But both courts sided with the Architectural Board.
So clearly, there's some legal basis for what the city is doing.
Right, it's not just an arbitrary decision. This brings us to the central legal issue here, the whole idea of police power.
Ah, police power, a favorite topic in law school.
Right. We usually think of it as the government's authority to, protect health and safety, keep things running smoothly.
Public welfare, the classic justification.
But the Reed case asks, does that power include telling people their house is too ugly?
Can aesthetics, purely visual preferences, be a valid reason for the government to restrict what you do with your property?
That's the million-dollar question. Now, to justify its decision, the court came up with this three-part test.
The famous three-part test.
First part is the regulation, in this case, denying the building permit, has to serve a substantial public interest.
Okay, so how does the court connect something as subjective as looking nice to a substantial public interest?
This is where things get interesting. They argued that a neighborhood's aesthetic character, how it looks, directly impacts property values.
Interesting point. So a house that clashes could actually bring down property values.
That's the argument. And if values go down, that affects the whole community, its tax base, economic health, all that.
Right. So it's not just about one person's taste, but potential economic harm.
Exactly. And they even said, quote, "The concept of public welfare is broad, aesthetic as well as monetary."
Expanding the traditional view of what public welfare really means.
Pretty big shift. The second part of the test is that the regulation can't be arbitrary or unreasonable.
Okay, so how did the court decide if the Architectural Board's decision met that standard?
They focused on who was making the decision. This wasn't just a random group of people saying, "I don't like that style."
Right, it needs to be more than just personal preference.
The board was made up of professional architects, supposed to be applying proper architectural principles.
So it's about expert judgment, not just someone saying, "I don't like flat roofs."
Exactly. Supposedly grounded in design principles, not just personal taste.
Makes sense. But the third part of the test, that's where it gets really tricky. Objective standards.
How can you have objective standards for something as subjective as aesthetics?
That is the challenge. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder, as they say.
Right. But the court focused on the fact that the board pointed to specific design elements.
Yeah.
The flat roof versus pitched roofs, the lots of glass walls, that 10-foot wall.
Okay, so they're looking at the specific features and how they compare to the existing neighborhood style.
Yeah, and how those differences might affect the visual harmony, I think is how they put it.
Interesting. So it's not a blanket ban on modern architecture, but a judgment about how those elements fit into this particular context.
Exactly. And they lean heavily on this idea that the city, through its board, has the expertise and the duty to protect property values and the community's character.
And there's that legal principle of deference to legislative decisions, unless they're clearly wrong.
Right. Courts generally don't want to second guess the city's judgment on these kinds of things.
Unless it's way out of line.
Okay, but this wasn't a unanimous decision. The judges themselves had different views on this.
Different perspectives on the court are always fascinating. Let's unpack those.
So the majority opinion, as we've talked about, basically said aesthetics, when tied to property values, can be a valid use of police power.
Expanding the traditional view.
But there was a concurring opinion from Judge Silbert. He agreed with the outcome, but added a really important caveat.
What was his perspective?
He stressed the need to allow for some flexibility, for architectural innovation, you know, not stifling creativity.
So he's saying community character matters, but we don't want to freeze neighborhoods in time, prevent new styles from emerging.
Exactly. A balance between preserving character and allowing for change. Then we have the dissenting opinion from Judge Corrigan, who disagreed pretty strongly with the board's decision.
A dissenting voice always adds so much to legal analysis. What was his argument?
He essentially said aesthetics alone, without a clear threat to public health or safety, shouldn't trump a homeowner's right to build on their property.
So he's sticking to that more traditional, limited view of police power.
Right. He even used this powerful phrase, aesthetic tyranny.
Aesthetic tyranny. Wow, that's a strong statement.
Basically, this idea that subjective tastes could be used to control what people do with their property, even if there's no real harm.
It's a slippery slope argument.
Exactly. Now, let's look at some key quotes that really capture these different viewpoints. We've already mentioned that one from the majority about public welfare being both aesthetic and monetary.
That one's crucial because it directly links aesthetics to a legitimate public interest.
Right. It's the foundation for their whole argument. They also referenced that Ohio precedent about deferring to legislative decisions, unless they're clearly erroneous.
Reinforcing the idea that courts should generally trust the city's judgment on these matters.
But what about the dissenting judge? What really sums up his opposition?
He said, and this is a powerful quote, "The proposition that a city can't regulate for purely aesthetic reasons unrelated to public health or safety is well settled in Ohio."
So he's pointing to the established legal tradition that the Reed case might be breaking away from.
Highlighting a potential shift in how courts are viewing aesthetic regulation.
A big deal for property rights. Now, we've thrown around this term police power a lot. Can you unpack that a little more?
Sure. Traditionally, it's been about protecting health, safety, morals, that kind of thing.
The classic justification.
But the Reed case basically expands that to include economic well-being through property values and even aesthetic well-being.
Saying a visually pleasing community is part of public welfare.
Exactly. It legitimizes this idea that a city can be concerned with how it looks as long as it's tied to those more concrete impacts on property values and community character.
So it's not just about what you do with your land, but how it looks while you're doing it.
Adds a whole new dimension to land use regulation.
Big time. Now, we've also talked about the board's decision being based on expert judgment, not just random preferences.
Right. That's key to making it reasonable, not arbitrary.
Can you break down that distinction a bit more? What's the difference between "I don't like that style" and the process the board was supposed to be using?
It's all about the reasoning and justification. If it's just "I hate modern architecture," that's purely subjective.
Not going to fly in court.
But the board, being made up of architects, was supposed to analyze the specific design choices, the flat roof, the glass walls, how they contrast with the existing neighborhood, and explain why those choices were harmful, maybe to property values or community character.
So it's about applying those proper architectural principles they talked about.
Exactly. Articulating why this specific design in this specific context is problematic, not just expressing a general dislike.
Okay, so it's like, we're not saying it's ugly, we're saying it violates these principles of good design within this neighborhood.
And that those violations have tangible consequences.
Much more defensible legally. Now, the Reed case really focuses on architectural design. How does this fit to the bigger picture of zoning law?
REED is a fascinating development in zoning law, which has traditionally focused on things like separating land uses, residential, commercial, industrial, and regulating things like building height and density.
The nuts and bolts of how land can be used.
Exactly. REED adds this layer of aesthetic regulation on top of those basic controls.
So it's not just what you do with your property, but what it looks like.
Right, and it raises questions about how far that can go. You could compare it to landmark preservation cases where a building's historical look is protected, but REED applies it to more ordinary neighborhoods.
So a city can try to control the overall look and feel, even for new construction.
And as Judge Corrigan pointed out, that raises some big questions about how much power a city should have over individual property rights.
It's a real balancing act. And that brings us to a question for you, our listeners, especially those future lawyers out there. Where do you see the line between community aesthetics and individual property rights?
It's a tough question with no easy answers.
Could this ruling, focused on architecture, be used to justify regulations on other things, like solar panels on roofs or even what color you paint your house?
Fascinating question. The principle established in REED that aesthetics can be a legitimate concern when tied to community character and property values could potentially be applied to a wide range of things.
It really makes you think about the limits of government power and individual freedom.
It's a debate that's likely to continue as cities evolve and new technologies emerge.
For sure. So to quickly recap our deep dive into REED v. Architectural Board of Review, this case set a precedent. Aesthetics can be grounds for denying a building permit, but only under specific conditions.
It has to be a substantial public interest, not arbitrary or unreasonable, and based on those objective architectural standards.
It's a landmark case, still shaping how cities approach aesthetic regulations and how courts balance those regulations with property rights.
It's a case that every law student and really every citizen should be familiar with.
We really encourage you to think about those different opinions in the case, the majority, the concurrence, the dissent. They each offer a different perspective on this complex issue.
It's a great example of how legal principles play out in the real world, shaping the communities we live in.
And ultimately, REED leaves us with this question. In a society that values both individual freedom and the benefits of community, how do we decide what our built environment should look like?
It's a question that goes beyond just law and architecture. It touches on our values, our sense of place, and how we want to live together.